doing this series on each of the books of the Bible, it creates a little bit of a problem because there are so many wonderful stories of faith from each book of the Bible. So here, as we find ourselves in 2 Kings today, I've chosen to tell the story of the little servant girl, and also connected with that, of course, is the story of Naaman. And I hope the Lord will bless your heart today as He did mine as I was doing the preparation. Tucklin read for you how that in the beginning here of chapter 5, it says that Naaman was commander of the army of the king of Syria. That means that Naaman was a man of influence. He had fame, he had respect, he had honor. He was also a man of war. He could have even ordered or directed the very mission that would have captured the little servant girl that became the servant to his wife. There was one problem. He had wealth and fame and honor. He had respect, but he was dying. He had a chronic disease, the one called leprosy. The disease that very few people ever were cured of. Even in the days of Jesus in the New Testament, he mentions that there were many of those who had leprosy in the land of Israel in the time of Elisha. But none of them were healed of their leprosy except this man here called Naaman. The servant girl is introduced in verse 2. And the Syrians had gone out on raids and had brought back captive a young girl from the land of Israel, and she waited on Naaman's wife. And she said to her mistress, If only my master were with the prophet who is in Samaria, for he would heal him of his leprosy. We know some things about this servant girl. Of course, she was in her youth. She could have developed the attitude, like we were thinking of in our children's story, of seemingly being forsaken and without mother and without her father and without comfort and without hope. But something in this little child just seemed to move her to happiness and joy. She could have become very bitter because of what had happened to her. But instead, somehow, her life was turned toward faithfulness in service. She had things going good for her in the sense that she was becoming the answer to her mother and father's prayer. Reminds me a little bit about the story of Daniel. You know, Daniel was captured. He was taken as a youth to Babylon. But over and over again, he stood up for what was right and what was honorable, and God blessed him because of it. Something had happened in the early training of this girl. Now, everybody listen to me. It's something how you can be a parent, and you raise your children the same way, and yet, because of personality or genetics, whatever it is, the children are all different. It's a wonderful privilege when our children are ready for the kingdom. And a lot of that is dependent upon early training in childhood. Now, there comes a time when mom and daddy has to let go and accountability is turned over to the child. But one of the things that our church has been very strong in promoting ever since really the late 1800s is the idea of Christian education. And not only do we believe in early training of children through Christian education, but we believe that throughout a child's lifetime, as they mature and grow older, that is a tremendous benefit. And we don't say a lot about it in our church here, but we support Christian education financially. And as our church grows and our young people become older, well, then our needs increase and our needs for financial funding increase. You will find in our church budget, we are as liberal as we can be when it comes to providing a Christian education subsidy or scholarship for those who are attending church school. But that has to be funded by somebody. Somebody has to give money toward that. And if you believe in Christian education and you have the funds and the resources to do that, well, certainly in our church it would be appropriate for you to do that on your tithe envelope. And Tim will make sure that it gets appropriately budgeted toward that. I'm appreciative of those who are recipients of those monies, and I'm appreciative of those who give the money. But what we do here as a church family, it comes from the collective giving of everyone here. And it's amazing what can happen if a number of people pitch in and give just a little bit on a regular basis. So my plug for Christian education today is very brief but very intentional. We would like to have more monies to be able to subsidize our young people in Christian education. But this little girl was trained by her mother and father in the ways of God. When she was captured, that became a strength to her. She must have seen things in that household that are not common to us. For instance, we know by the rules in the camp of Israel, if any Israelite was diagnosed with leprosy, it was a death sentence. It was a social death sentence. They were not to talk. They were not to socialize. Anywhere they went, they were supposed to be a certain distance away. They were supposed to shout, "Unclean! Unclean! Unclean!" It was even unlawful, I think, for their shadow to fall upon a healthy person. They certainly could not have been in a family situation because the disease was spread by association and by touching. But here is the commander of the Syrian army, and he's got this disease, and people know that he has it. So he's not privileged to do what I do on a Sabbath morning and shake hands with you as you leave. I don't know what all those restrictions must have been at work, but certainly even at home, he probably would have been sitting at the far end of the table. He would have had his own utensils to eat from. If he had children, he had to be very reserved about hugging his children and showing affection. And it must have been a horrible thing to just be all by yourself, you know, in those times when you could benefit from socialization. And his wife, we know he was married here, must have treated him with deep respect and courtesy, but still, the little servant girl that took care of her, she was mature enough to know there was a great need in this household. Somewhere in her early training, she was introduced to the idea of hope and faith. Faith and hope is what, even to this day, drives people who have chronic illness toward alternative treatments and even the normal way of treating things. But it's hope in healing that causes people to travel to different parts of the world and have procedures done that are not yet approved in this country. And she made the statement, if he could only go, he could be healed And others around her picked up on her statement. If he could go back to my home, he could be healed. Strange transition happens here. This, I won't say worthless, that's never a proper term for anyone, but this young slave child whose value monetarily would have been low, suddenly what she has to say becomes extremely important. It becomes so important that the words she has verbalized are taken into the throne room of the Syrian king. Naaman goes in and says to him, "This little girl from Israel says that if I could go over there, I could be healed." I ask you, what made the transition from the words of a child, which sometimes can be so filled with imagination and their minds are going 100 miles an hour. Something was transitioning her words into words of importance before the king of Syria. It had to be the power of God. I was talking last night with my little grandson, Austin, and he's the sharpest little kid. He's just so much like me. I was asking him what he had done yesterday, and he said he had hauled gravel and he had played in the dirt, and suddenly he became very serious and he said, "And I saw a monster today." This little servant girl's words were not filled with imagination, but filled with a child's determined spirit that if somehow she could convince this man of war, he could be healed. She must have really believed, and believed it so strongly that others around her began to believe it. We get some insight into the way things were done internationally back then. Naaman goes into the king and tells him, "This servant girl has said, if I could go over there to Israel, I could be healed." Could it be that those pagan peoples were very much aware of some of the miracles that Jehovah God had accomplished for Israel? I think so. And she was just simply reminding them, there is a God of heaven who can do these great things. Sure, they didn't understand it. Even the working of miracles themselves, to me, is an amazing idea and topic. The king says, "Well, why don't you go?" And he wrote a letter, and somebody provided several talents of gold. And so Naaman goes into the land of Israel. He leaves the pagan gods of Baal and Ashtaroth and goes into the land of Israel. But there's a problem. The land of Israel is not this holy, sanctified, geographical piece of property that we sometimes think of it as being. In this setting right here, Ahab, one of the most wicked king that ever lived, he's no longer around. And the scholars believe that his son was on the throne, but he didn't have the training that this little girl had. The little girl, many miles away, was promoting the God of heaven, Then we have the king of Israel that's had very little religious training, because when Naaman shows up and Naaman presents him with the mission and purpose, he's there, and he's presented a letter from the king of Syria. We have what some of that letter said in verse 6. The king of Israel read, "Now be advised when this letter comes to you that I have sent Naaman my servant to you, that you may heal him of his leprosy." Now, a couple of weeks ago here, I used the expression that somebody stomped their feet, pooched out their lips, and got red in the face. I don't remember who that was, but I said that. Well, this king responds in a very similar way. Now remember, he doesn't have much of a life of faith. He's not taken the opportunity even to develop in his adult life much of a life of faith. We all have opportunity if we would do it. We have opportunity to develop the very basics of Christianity that I've talked about so much here, such as just prayer and Bible study. But we don't do it. If somebody asks you to show them the Ten Commandments, could you turn and find the Ten Commandments for them? I'm not asking for a response. If somebody asks for a Bible promise on eternal life, could you turn to one Bible text? How about a text that speaks about the second coming of Jesus? Could you find one text? I don't think it's asking too much that we know at least one text to support what we believe. You know what Myra Pletcher told me? She said to me that she was going to buy shoes with steel toes so that I wouldn't step on her toes. You did say that, didn't you? You gave me permission. You gave me permission to repeat it, didn't you? We can continue this discussion later. Naaman stands there before the king, and the king is so upset he wrings his hand and he begins to sweat profusely, and he doesn't know what to do, and he charges that Ben-Hadad, the king of Syria, is up to some type of mischief here. And he becomes so upset, he tears his clothing and he just goes into deep despair and hopelessness and begins to cry and to wail and moan that the world is coming to an end. And what was he going to do? Instead of seeing this as an opportunity for the God of heaven to work. You see, he now has the attention of the Syrian king. He's got the commander of the Syrian army right there with him. What a wonderful opportunity for God to work, for God to prove there is a God in heaven. But instead, he looks like a little whipped puppy dog and his head hung low until Elisha hears about it. And Elisha sends word, "I can help you. I will help you. Send the man to me." The Naaman comes to Elisha's house, and what a difference there must have been going down the driveway to Elisha's house and the driveway to Naaman's house back in Syria. Or the sidewalk in front of his house. I don't know exactly, but I can promise you one house was big and large and filled with splendor and the best of decorations, and the other house was very small and conservative and utilitarian and functional. What a difference between the humble house of Elisha and the mighty, beautiful house of Naaman. But Naaman goes to the house of Elisha, and Elisha knows he's coming. And here's something else. We're not required to understand how God works, are we? I mean, I'm sympathetic toward Naaman. I think he had a right to expect Elisha to come out and meet him. But that wasn't the way they decided to do things, and so that's okay. We will just accept it the way that it is. Elisha sends his servant out with a very basic, fundamental request. Go down to the Jordan River and bathe yourself, dip yourself, immerse yourself, baptize yourself 7 times in the river. Naaman became so mad and angry at that, he wanted a ceremony. He wanted some pomp and circumstance. He wanted something out of this more than just being told to do something as simple as going to the Jordan River and dipping himself 7 times. Read the story for yourself. He becomes furious and turns his horse around and puts it into, well, horses don't have transmissions, but he was ready to leave, to go back home. Thank God some of those who cared for him surrounded him and said, now listen, just reason a little bit here. If he had asked you to do something very difficult, you would have done it. If he would have asked you to pay a big price, you know, you would have paid the price. What would it hurt to just go check it out? Go do what the man has asked you to do. We are already here. Do you believe in intercessory prayer? Intercessory faith? We don't practice it. We believe in it. We do it every once in a while. You got those boots on, Myra? We should be interceding all throughout the day because we have great need. And God works through intercession. The little girl was praying many miles away. Maybe she had her boss praying. Maybe Elisha was praying. He had already prayed. So Naaman goes down to the river, and sure enough, he goes down each time, comes up, nothing happens. You know, if he had stopped on the second time, he could not have been healed. Or the third time, or the fourth time, he could not have been healed. I heard one of the best sermons last Sunday night I've ever heard in my life. It was given by our conference president, Elder Ed Wright, up at the pastor's meeting at Cohutta Springs, about how that the journey of life is long. And it's filled with a lot of pitfalls, and it has curves, and it has hills and valleys, and we have to stay on the road. I wonder how many Christians today in our community around us here have once embraced the same faith that you embrace, but now they've gotten off track. They've not been able to finish the, if I can make a parallel here, the requirement of God. The requirement for Naaman at this time was 7. The requirement for us right now is a lifetime. If we drop out, we can be lost, can't we? The prayer for you today, Lacey, was intentional. I'm glad for your faith, girl. She gives me a hug every Sabbath. But there are those that would destroy her faith, who would tell her that God and religion and faith is no good any longer. Don't you believe it? Naaman comes up out of that water, and he looks, and his skin is so clear. It's youthful. It's brand new. It's come from the command of God, and he doesn't understand how all that cellular activation has taken place. He just knows that now he's clean. He was dying when he went in, but now he's got good life and new life. Hey, I raised my right hand. Did you see that? He could raise his right arm when he come up out of the river and say, praise the God of heaven. We don't have record he said that, but I like to think he said it. Praise the God of heaven. I've done what God asked, and I am healed. I have new life. That's the way it works for us. When we do what God asks, by faith believing, we're going to make it into the kingdom. I like the feeling of being spiritually clean. We have baptisms, we have communion service. But the constant in our life is spending time with God on a regular basis. Songwriters caught the same story. They capture it with words of song about being washed and made whiter than snow and coming to the river. Our closing hymn today is hymn number 318. It's really an invitation for God to do for us what he did for Naaman, but to do it for us, he could do it in a physical way, but I'm thinking in a spiritual way that God can cleanse the heart, he can wash the heart and give us habits of rightfulness and joy and hope rather than despair and pain and suffering.